Sue Carter on Current State in for the vacationing Mark Bayshore. We're going to take you back a little bit to probably what was 10th grade biology class. Nitrogen. Nitrogen. It plays an essential role in plant growth, but it's a scarce source, a scarce resource actually in nature. Farmers once had to use beans or legumes to fix the nutrient in their fields. But with the advent of artificial fertilizers, agriculture has been able to bypass that step and put nitrogen directly into the soil. While this has allowed farmers to increase production of nutrient-intensive crops like corn, and we've got a lot of it, it's had some not-so-great side effects. New research from Michigan State indicates that artificial fertilizers could be throwing off the worldwide nitrogen cycle. To learn more, we welcome Jen Lau, Assistant Professor of Plant Biology at Michigan State. Welcome to Current State, Jen.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Great. Well, let's start at the beginning because I am not a scientist. You know, I'm only a journalist. Let's start off with a basic definition of the nitrogen cycle. What is it, Jen, and how does it work?
Well, the nitrogen cycle is how nitrogen moves through the environment. So the atmosphere, 78% nitrogen, the most abundant element in the atmosphere. But that's all a form of nitrogen that plants can't use. And so to get all that nitrogen out of the atmosphere, plants rely on bacteria, mostly. A little bit of lightning can fix nitrogen into forms that plants can use, but it's mostly this mutualism between plants in the legume family, like soybeans or peas, and bacteria that live in the soil called rhizobia. So this interaction between these legumes and bacteria, something called a mutualism, meaning that the legume benefits from the interaction and then the bacteria in the soil benefit from the interaction. The legume gets nitrogen, the bacteria gets carbon or energy from the plant. So this mutualism used to be responsible for the vast majority of nitrogen in terrestrial systems on land.
Right.
But now...
I'm taking notes here, okay? Because I know there's going to be a quiz.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But then back in the late 30s, humans figured out how to synthetically produce fertilizers. And that's a cool history story all on its own. But with that... And also with the burning of fossil fuels, we have been increasing the amount of nitrogen in our terrestrial systems, in our landscape. And that means that can cause problems for natural plant communities. Nitrogen addition typically reduces plant diversity. And in the system that we're studying, it's basically breaking down this mutualism that used to be responsible for most of the nitrogen fixed on Earth.
So the mutualism, a kind of a symbiotic relationship, was quite valuable and productive initially, but the benefits have diminished, as I hear you're saying?
Yeah, the benefits are diminishing. And there's two reasons for that. One is what we call an ecological reason. Mm-hmm. So when you fertilize a legume, it will allocate fewer resources to the bacteria below ground that are fixing all this nitrogen because the plant doesn't need those bacteria.
So we're starving off the bacteria a little bit?
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. But the other thing that's happening is that the bacteria are also evolving to be less mutualistic. They're evolving to fix less nitrogen. And so it's shifting this mutualism, this positive interaction for the plant, more towards an antagonism or a parasitism. It's making the bacteria less helpful to the plant over
it's
time.
Not nice to fool bacteria, is it?
No, they are powerful evolutionary machines. Because of their huge population sizes, and they have some really cool mechanisms for evolving in the face of environmental change.
Now, this is a professor who's excited about her work. I can see it in her face. Take me back again. You mentioned it briefly, but I want to go a little bit more into it. Why is nitrogen so important to plants?
So in most systems, it's the most limiting resource. Mm-hmm. So that's why you fertilize your plants at home, they grow more. It's because that's the resource they need the most. Mm-hmm. And that's true for most terrestrial systems. Most of the plants on land, they just need more nitrogen.
Mm-hmm. And before, you gave us a date in the 1930s, before there were some changes in how nitrogen was applied, what was the typical method of getting nitrogen to the plants?
Natural. So before that, there was no synthetic fertilizer to apply to plants. It was all natural. And through this mutualism between the legumes and the rhizobia that was responsible for much of it, most of it, lightning can fix atmospheric nitrogen into forms that plants can use. And then also once nitrogen is in the soil, it's continually being recycled.
Mm-hmm. I'm sort of reminded of my readings in history where the Romans had a crop rotation, two fields.
Yep.
Then the medieval monks figured out, well, a three-field rotation was better?
That's exactly right, yeah. Yeah, so if you insert a legume and this rhizobia into that system, you can boost nitrogen in the soil that can benefit the crop that follows.
Now, rhizobia is the particular bacteria?
Yeah. So there are different, we generally call them all rhizobia, but there are many different species of rhizobia or taxa of rhizobia, yeah.
Differences between naturally occurring nitrogen and the kind we put in fertilizers?
They seem to behave differently in the soil. So there's some evidence that biologically fixed nitrogen, that's the type that the bacteria and the legume make together, it seems to stick around in the soil a little bit better. I don't think we really know why yet. It might be partially how it's fixed, right? So it's fixed over a longer time scale. So it's not like you have this huge pause when when a farmer fertilizes his field. So there do seem to be some differences.
Wow. Last summer, the people in Toledo experienced a horrific event for them. Water supply was down for 3 days. Was that a consequence of too much nitrogen? What happened there, Jen?
So this is getting a little bit outside my area of expertise, but yes, that's a direct result of increased eutrophication, so increased nutrients in the water. In that case, it could have been nitrogen. It could have been phosphorus. That's another common nutrient that causes blooms, particularly in lakes and other water bodies.
And I realize this may be a little bit beyond, but are we looking at perhaps a succession of summers with algae blooms?
Some recent data suggests so. So it's a combination of increased nutrients in the water and also temperatures play a big role in those blooms.
This is Sue Carter getting a great science lesson from Jen Lau, Assistant Professor of Plant Biology here at Michigan State. And we're talking about how artificial fertilizers are impacting the world's nitrogen cycle. Who produces this nitrogen? Do we see giant plants out in the field that are factories for nitrogen?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So
I thought I saw one the other day.
So, I mean, synthetic nitrogen, it's industrially produced. It's a really expensive process. Hmm. So some records suggest that about 2% of the world's energy goes towards producing synthetic nitrogen.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, nitrogen's why we can produce so many crops, right, and can feed our growing world population. So it has lots of benefits, but there are also costs to all this synthetic nitrogen. It's also expensive for the legumes to produce, to fix this nitrogen as well. Mm-hmm. And it's all goes back to chemistry and physics. The nitrogen in the atmosphere is something called dinitrogen. It's two nitrogen atoms linked together by three bonds. Mm-hmm. So it's really tightly held together. So to break those bonds just takes a lot of energy. And whether it's energy produced through photosynthesis from the plant or energy coming from our power plants to produce the nitrogen in factories, it's costly.
Is some of that produced here in mid-Michigan?
Oh, that's a great idea. I don't know where the largest fertilizer plants are in the U.S. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of the problem that we'll be talking about tomorrow with polio, with PBB. That was a fertilizer mixed into cow feed up in St. Louis near Alma. So it's starting to make some connections in my mind that's partially caffeinated today. Research for the project, who funds it and where are you headed with it?
Yeah, so our research is funded by the National Science Foundation. And it's really, we couldn't do our research without something called the Kellogg Biological Station Long-Term Ecological Research Site. So there are LTER, that's Long-Term Ecological Research Sites, all over the country. And these are just really great resources because they've been experimentally applying these treatments since back in 1988. Mm-hmm. And so now we can go in and ask, what are the consequences of adding all this nitrogen to natural systems?
Is Michigan State a leader in this area?
I would say so.
yeah. I'll join you in that.
Yeah. So the KBS, the Kellogg Biological Station LTER, it's the only agricultural LTER site. There's been a lot of great community ecology, agricultural ecology, and ecosystem ecology that's come out of that project.
From a political perspective, does there need to be some public policy change in how we use fertilizers and how they're developed, how they're applied?
Well, so that's a great question. There is a sociologist down at Kellogg Biological Station investigating that right now, and I don't know about a policy change, but she's really looking at how do we get farmers to adopt less polluting strategies, basically. And that could be things like no-till agriculture or, relying more on cover crops. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely things farmers can do to reduce synthetic inputs And the challenge is, how do we get farmers to adopt those strategies? A lot of times farmers want to adopt those strategies because fertilizer is really expensive.
Interesting. So that's a financial balance for mm-hmm, them,
exactly.
The cost of fertilizer. They may get lower crop yields, but they're paying less to achieve the higher yields mm-hmm. in the process. Do you anticipate that maybe down the road we will, by force of nature, see lower crop yields?
Oh, I have no idea. crop yields have been pretty steadily increasing over the past century. The Green Revolution, we're continually
right.
breeding
Norman
better
Borlaug,
and more
right.
efficient crops. Mm-hmm. But my guess is that there's a limit to how mm-hmm. how much we can increase yields.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think your research will take you, Jen Lau?
So I'm really interested in evolution. This is mm-hmm. a great system for studying rapid evolution. And how these evolutionary changes can then feed back to affect the environment. And so that's our plan. We'll continue studying evolutionary changes in response to nitrogen addition and other global changes like global warming. My collaborator at the University of Illinois is really interested in the genetic mechanisms causing these changes to the rhizobia, what's making them less cooperative, what's making them fix less nitrogen. Mm-hmm. So that's our next step.
How does global warming fit into to the schematic that you see?
I'm interested in global changes in general. So this project that you've been asking me about, it specifically is looking at nitrogen addition or nitrogen deposition. Global warming is another global change that is affecting just as many areas, just as many plant communities across Michigan, across the U.S., across the world.
So you've got a lot of research on your agenda ahead of you.
Yes.
Yeah. You mentioned evolution, and I heard a story recently on NPR that talked about a different kind of bacteria that you can see generations very quickly evolve.
Yes.
You know, in humans, it takes a while.
Yes.
But you've probably seen generations and generations of bacteria already.
Yeah. So this experiment that we're working in was started back in 1988.
Oh,
so that's, you know, how many bacterial generations,
hundreds.
Who knows, hundreds, millions, and so that's why we can see these evolutionary responses, and bacteria evolve really rapidly. It's a great system for studying these types of questions.
And where is your lab located on campus, or do most of your work at Kellogg Biological?
My lab is located at Kellogg Biological Station, and I'm associated with the Department of Plant Biology here on campus.
Oh, that's got to be a lot of fun for you, and that's a great place if people haven't visited. There are opportunities to go down to KBS, right?
That's right. We love having visitors down there. There's a pasture-based dairy system you can tour. There's a bird sanctuary, as well as our main site.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, this segment has been just really instructive for me. We've been talking about the impact of artificial fertilizers on the nitrogen cycle with Jen Lau, Assistant Professor of Plant Biology here at Michigan State University. Jen, thanks for joining us so much.
Thank you. I love talking science.
This segment supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday. It's part of our partnership.